This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to Your Turn with Mike Causey, brought to you by WEPA on Federal News Network. WEPA is the life insurance choice of over 46,000 federal workers and their families. Learn more at WAEPA.org. Here's your host, Mike Causey.
Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, delighted to have you with us. We're going to have a very good show today, I think a very interesting one, because we're going to be talking about the Thrift Savings Plan, which is just about everybody's one of everybody's favorite subjects. And our visiting expert is Arthur Stein, who's well-known to people who listen to the show regularly. Art is a financial planner and advisor in the Washington area, and he's been with us on many shows. And Art, are you with us today?
I'm here.
Okay. And Arthur, normally when you come on, which is about once a month, once every 5 weeks, I ask you and other guests to write some bullet points so that I can build a column out of it, and we'll plug the show and at the same time give people an idea of what we're looking at here. And in this case, you always do a good job. This is an exceptionally good column. I just don't know where to start, but it's so interesting, and you're talking about the danger of letting political thinking enter into investing. And the headline on your column today is 9 months of unexpected events in the TSP funds. And would you go with that?
Yeah, well, people I'm sure realize that it's been a pretty incredible year, and not in a good way. And for the stock market, it was doing well until the pandemic hit. And then we had a pretty major crash. It was down 34% within weeks. And it was actually the fastest move of that size, I think, in history. You know, Mike, we talk about bull and bear markets, and I'm not sure that people always understand what I'm speaking
exactly about.
So let me just say, a bull market is when the market has gone up more than 20% from a previous low. And, you know, keeps going. That's a bull market. That's a good thing. And a bear market is when it's gone down 20% or more from a previous high. And on my website, which is www.arthursteinfinancial.com, there is actually a blog post about, you know, how bull and bear markets work. So starting this year, at the beginning of this year, we were in the longest bull market in U.S. history, and it went over 11 years through February, late February, actually. And then the pandemic hit, the world economy shut down. People were obviously very panicked, didn't know what was going on, and the market crashed. And it was the fastest time, as I've said, to go from a bull market to a bear market ever. So at one point in late March, the C fund in the TSP, which is an S&P 500 stock index fund, was down 34% from a previous high. And many people thought that it would keep going, you know, because 34% is a big decline, but we've certainly seen bigger. And actually, the decline in 2008 and 2009, one point reached 55% down for the C fund. But it didn't keep going down. It bottomed out in late March, and then it turned into a new bull market, and is still in this new bull market. And now, as of the end of September, the C funds up 5.5% for the year. The S fund is up 3.5%. I fund is actually down for the year, has not done well. And the F fund has outperformed all the other funds. That's a bond fund, so that's unusual. It's up 6.75% for the year. So it's been a very topsy-turvy year. Obviously, a lot of political uncertainty. And just, you know, people are scared and worried and don't know what's coming next, especially now when you know, COVID cases have all of a sudden started going up again, not just in the United States, but all over the world. And clearly, it seems like it's going to be a bad winter in terms of the pandemic. So a lot of people are saying, well, it makes no sense that the market is up considering, you know, what's going on, because the U.S. economy, output and employment and manufacturing and everything else, far below previous highs and what it was last year at this time. So why is the market going up? And then we have the election, and many people feel that if, you know, some people feel if Biden wins, the market will crash. Other people feel like if Trump wins, the market will crash. And I've certainly seen many articles, authors saying, you know, you should do this with your investments to prepare for the election of this particular person. And I've had calls from my investment clients saying, you know, what do we do? Well, in my opinion, you should not take politics into account when managing your investments. And the reason is, one, nobody can predict who's going to win. And we certainly saw that last year where, you know, the pundits and prognosticators and pollsters, all with very few exceptions, thought Hillary Clinton was going to win and not Donald Trump. And the consensus Wall Street estimate was that if Trump did win, the market would crash. Well, everybody got it wrong, you know, both of those. Clinton won and the market didn't crash. So, you know, that really good indication of how hard it is to, you know, use politics to predict stock market moves. And the people who are writing the articles now, you know, basically they're saying that, one, they can predict who's going to win, and two, that they can predict what the effect of that is going to be. And I don't see what evidence there is for that. And then the other example I gave was, you know, if in January, you, for some reason, you were able to forecast what was going to happen with the that there was going to be a pandemic, how bad it was going to be, what it would do to the world economy, and you then invested based upon that knowledge, I think you would have sold stocks and, you know, and never gone back in. Or in fact, if you did nothing, you were up about 5.5% for the year. And over the last 12 months, up, you know, 12 to 15%. So it's just hopeless trying to use, you know, trying to manage your portfolio based upon who you think is going to win.
Yeah, you know, if you can get in that Wayback Machine, go back to 2016, all the experts save one, and that was a professor at George Washington University who's been right much more often than he's been wrong. But he not only predicted that President Trump would win the electoral vote, not the popular vote, which he didn't, but he'd win the electoral vote. But he also predicted he would be impeached, which I thought was really interesting. I mean, who would make two guesses like that both turned out to be correct?
And so what's he predicting now, Mike?
He's predicting that Senator Biden will win. Former Vice President Biden will win. But that was a couple of days ago. I haven't seen anything since. But you know, your point is so well taken. And the thing in the column you wrote that jumped out at me is, what if we knew, say this time in October of 2019, if somebody had said, okay, there's going to be a worldwide pandemic, going to be unrest in a lot of places, which is not unusual. The economy is going to tank. The stock market is going to go up and down. What would you have done? You know, even if we had known the exact program and what was going to happen, what would you do? And the answer is most people would act emotionally, which I know you often said is one of the worst things that can happen when you're investing.
Yeah, and people do react emotionally. And but in this case, if you knew everything that was going to happen this year, to me, it would be a rational decision to pull out of stocks, because you would expect the market to tank and stay down for a long time, you know, much longer than it did. In fact, it was headed back up within weeks. And it was, you know, it was just an incredible period. It basically went from a bull market to a bear market, back to a bull market in less than 2 months. And that's a real whipsaw. And it's also another reason why it is so difficult to time the market. And by that, we mean, you know, trying to get out of stocks before they fall, before they go down, before the C fund declines, and then get back in before they start to rise. And you would have had to have acted so quickly, and no one would have, because yeah, it was down 34%, but you know, most people would have expected another 20-25% decline.
We need to take a short break here. Eric says this is the time. So we'll take a short break here on federalnewsnetwork.com, 1500 AM, and then we'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, and I'm talking with Arthur Stein. He's a well-known financial planner in the Washington area, and many of his clients are, I guess most actually are either active or retired federal workers. And you have some very successful investors in your group, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
And I'm very happy about it.
I've spoken with a couple of them independently of you. They've called in and they are very happy with things. Now, you mentioned the Great Recession of 2008-2009, which in some ways the stock market took a much bigger hit, at least so far, for a much longer period of time. And during that time, we know from the records that hundreds of thousands of people moved from the C, S, and I funds, the stock index funds, and they moved into the G fund, the Treasury securities, for, quote, safety's sake. The idea is it's a safe harbor. They're going to wait it out when the market improves. In other words, time the market. But they're going to wait until the market improves and then go back to the stock market. And I know what you and other financial advisors have found through the years is that when a lot of people pull out of the market for safety reasons, they never go back.
Yeah, and this is a huge problem. It never seems like a good time to get back in.
Yep.
And it's easier just to, leave your money in and not do anything. And, you know, if at the beginning of 2007, so, you know, before the Great Recession, an investor, TSP participant, had $100,000 in each of the GF and C funds and just left the money there, did not make any new contributions, did not make withdrawals, and didn't react to the declines, just left their money in. You know, as of the end of September, the C fund investment would be 68% higher than the F fund investment.
Oh.
And more than double the G fund investments. And that's after recovering, you know, from the worst stock market decline and since the Great Depression, and actually this year's bear market. People who pulled out, well, then they have to figure out when to go back in. And as you say, people don't go back in. I don't know that I've ever met anybody who went back in.
Really?
And, you know, I just spoke to someone last week who told me that in 2017, he became very nervous about the market and he pulled out. And of course, then he never went back in, put everything in the G fund. And, you know, he lost about $100,000 or more as a result of that. You know, that's a pretty big loss. And it's a problem. You know, and the one thing, and I know I listened to your interview with Tammy last week, which is, you know, as always, very good. And she's incredible. the seven deadly sins.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I noticed that she emphasized in one of the seven deadly sins is that, you know, you think that someone in the TSP is giving you advice on what to do with your investments. And, you know, they're not. That's not what they're set up to do, and mm-hmm. that's not what they're doing. And you either have to manage things yourself, or you have to then go outside and pay somebody for investment advice. And TSP participants don't want to pay for investment advice. I mean, it's a generality. Mm-hmm. I mean, some will. And that's in spite of the fact that, you know, they might have lost $100,000 because they pulled out 2017 because they got nervous about something and never went back in.
Well, that's interesting that you say you've never known anybody that did that, because I've spoken with a couple of other financial planners and they've said the same thing. One said he had a client who got out of the market in 1987, I believe. And the last time I talked to him, the man was still waiting for the right time to come back.
It certainly doesn't seem like the right time now.
He's missed a few, yeah.
Yeah, well, and when President Trump was elected, mm-hmm. I had not a lot, but a few of my investment clients were panicked and called me up and said, should we pull everything out right now? And we didn't. And we're, you know, obviously yeah. very glad we did, because the market has continued to do well since President Trump was elected. And even with this year's bear market. So it's just, in order to do well historically, to do well with stocks, you did not need to buy and sell at the right time. You did not need to time the market. You did not need to pull out and then get back in. What you needed to do was just buy, you know, a well-diversified portfolio and hold on long enough. And that's what we've seen historically. Now, past performance, no guarantee of future performance. But I don't know of anybody who's saying that in the future, you know, bonds are going to outperform stocks. Mm-hmm. And you also, with TSP participants, you know, you see this enormous bias to the G fund, which again, you know, is just not justified. It does have zero volatility. Here we're speaking about the G fund.
Right.
But there's another, you know, really good bond fund in the TSP, the F fund, and almost every year it outperforms the G fund. Now, not every single year, but it's outperformed the G fund over the last, you know, year to date, over the last 1, 3, 5, 10, and 15 year periods. You know, that's a pretty consistent outperformance. And the G fund returns have been declining, you know,
yes.
really enormously, down 75% since 1988 and down 65% through this year. Those are huge declines at a time when the cost of living is still going up.
So your nest egg is shrinking and your expenses, your costs are increasing.
See, but that's the problem. That's where people, I think, one reason they fall into the, you know, the G fund trap mm-hmm. is their nest egg. If they have money in the G fund or all the money in the G fund, it is not shrinking. You know, it's worth a little bit more every time they look at it.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
But what they don't do is calculate the purchasing power of that investment. And purchasing power, you know,
that's what counts.
Because interest rates don't go up over time, it means the purchasing power is going down, especially after you factor in taxes and inflation.
Well, my colleague David Thornton wrote a really good story yesterday at Federal News Network, and people should call it up. And it's extremely thorough, and it's got all those numbers, and it talks about how the F fund, the bond fund, has outperformed the G fund dramatically. In fact, the bond fund is doing best of a lot of them this year. But it emphasizes the numbers are there. It's what you've been saying all along. What do you think it's going to take, or is there anything that will convince people that quote being safe, you know, lack of volatility, is not the same as being a safe investment?
Yeah. Well, you know,
maybe you can't.
So that's it.
Yeah.
You know, the G fund is called safe.
Yeah.
And who doesn't want their money to be safe, especially when they're retired? But that to me is just a poor use of language. The G fund has no volatility, and the bonds in the G fund are guaranteed by the U.S. government. The F fund does fluctuate in value, and there have been a few years, like I think maybe two, where it had a negative rate of return, but it outperforms. It just outperforms. And in the future, you know, I don't forecast the future, but people have to quit thinking of the G fund as safe. They just need to realize there are lots of investment risks, and volatility is one. But loss of purchasing power because of taxes and inflation is probably the most important one for long-term investors, or for people who are retired at 65 and are investing money, some of which they'll need 10, 20, and 30 years later.
That's a really good point. And in the chart you have with today's column, you show the performance from 2019, at the end of last year, through to today, and it shows the C fund, which is S&P 500, the F fund, which is bonds, and the G fund, stocks or treasury securities, and it's there. The numbers are there. They don't lie.
Yeah, and that's a good chart, because it does show the volatility in the F fund. You know, the F fund was up about 5% at the beginning of the year. Couple of, I'd say, 2 months in. And that was a big return for a bond fund. Then it declined and it was negative briefly, very briefly. And now it's up 6.7% for the year. But it did fluctuate in value, not only, you know, the times I just mentioned, but, you know, throughout the year. But the fluctuations are very small, especially when you compare them, you know, to the C fund, where the fluctuations are quite large.
Going to take a short break here, and then we'll be right back. And I wanted to talk some more about the impact of politics on people's investment strategies here on Federal News Network, 1500 AM. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. Glad to have you with us. Talking with Arthur Stein, who's an investment planner and a counselor in the Washington area. Most of his clients are current or former feds, and he's been called to Capitol Hill to lecture or instruct congressional staffers about the investing and that sort of thing. And he's a frequent guest on this show. Arthur, in your column today that you wrote for me, we're talking about, and we mentioned this earlier in the show, in 2016, all the pundits, save one, that professor at George Washington University, predicted Hillary Clinton would be elected president. Several people forgot about the Electoral College, but that she would be elected president. And people panicked and were stunned when it happened. And all of the predictions about what that would do to the market proved to be wrong. And there are charts and graphs, and the Wilshire people are kind enough to send me a daily report. It's called the Wilshire 6000 Index or something. And it's very interesting because it's a snapshot of the stock market as of 4 p.m. that day, the day they send it out. And it's absolutely fascinating because it's like so many documents that come out. You can pick any number and prove your point, or pick any number and it will confirm something, or it will scare you away. But you look at this, and it's like your comment earlier about being able to see into the future and kind of so what. You don't know what to do with this information because it changes from day to day. The target is constantly moving. And you make the point in the column that if people this time last year had known that the world was going to be hit by a pandemic, something called COVID-19, something few of us had ever heard of, and that the markets would react accordingly and that countries would shut down and open up and shut down again, and the stock markets would rise and fall, what would you have done with that knowledge? I mean, it's a rhetorical question because I certainly don't know what I would have done.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people would have pulled out, and you know, that includes, you know, the great investors, because clearly that was such a fundamental change. Never seen anything like it, and but it just didn't work out that way.
Well, what do you think about these people who had some kind of advance warning that it was going to be a lot worse than everybody was saying, and they took action, we're told. But what do you think that action was?
Well, I think what you're referring to is there have been reports that when the official White House line was that COVID was not going to be a big problem, and we shouldn't worry about it, that a group of Wall Street people were briefed at the White House and told what was actually the forecast, which was that, you know, it was going to be a huge problem.
Right.
And, you know, that's shocking.
Mm-hmm.
If they hadn't done it at the White House, I mean, it you know, to me, it's insider trading.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, they went to the White House and were briefed, so clearly not going to be prosecuted. And I'm sure they made, you know, if that happened, I'm sure that they made a lot of money by then speculating that stocks would go down. And, you know, about a month later, they did.
You know, they did, but then, you know, it still begs the question, what after that? What next? Because then they went back up again. So, I mean, is it possible that they were too clever for themselves?
Yes, it's certainly possible mm-hmm. that they didn't get back in time thinking it would go down further. And so, you know, I mean, I don't know. It would be sure. interesting to find out who was at that meeting and then try and trace the returns of the pools of money that they manage. You know, I kind of doubt that's going to happen. But, you know, it was very borderline event.
Well, I mean, it's to your point earlier, too, is you get this information, you act on it, you sell, and indeed the market does go down. So you have, quote, won for that day, but then you don't know when to go back in. You have no idea that it's going to go up. You have no idea when it's going to go up or how long it will last. You know, as you said, this year has been one for the books, literally. And so I would hope that it's very possible that these people who had this insider information lost a lot of money.
Not necessarily, you know, because it depends on how they did it, Mike. There are a lot of ways to trade where you could, you know, sell short or buy options and do all kinds of things that might have paid off. And a lot of the times these bets are leveraged. So we really don't know what was going to happen. But I think for the average person, you know, you're not going to buy on the way down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that's too scary, and it always seems like it's going to go down some more, especially this March. Even when it starts going up, people don't want to buy because, you know, the market fluctuates a lot. And you think, well, it's gone up a little bit, but then it's going to go down. And if you actually look at the hills and valleys on that chart, you can see where went down, went back up pretty quite a bit, and then went down again. And, you know, there's just, it's so hard to do. And I think for the average person, if you don't do anything, you don't have to worry about all this stuff. And of course, then we get people. And again, the person I spoke with last week falls into this category that not only did he pull everything out of the C and the S fund and put them in the G fund, but his biweekly contributions, he changed to go all into the G fund. Mm. And even if he had just kept those going,
yeah,
you know, it would greatly have, it would, I don't know to what degree, but it would have reduced his losses. And his risk at that point, you know, if you're, your risk with the investments you're making biweekly is very small compared to, you know, the amount of money you probably already right. have in. And then if the market crashes and you're making biweekly investments, well, that's good for you because you're buying when it's cheap. So, you know, I just think that people tend to outsmart themselves, or they tend just to react emotionally.
Well, I've spoken with four TSP millionaires in recent weeks, and then some at the beginning of this thing in March and April of this year. And three are still working, one's retired. And all of them, three men, one woman, were buying during this period of time. They allocated a certain amount that they wanted to do, and they were actually increasing their purchase of C and the S funds, not the I, but the C and the S funds, during this period when they were heading down. And that took some courage, but then again, they are TSP millionaires of their own making.
Yeah, and I know you had a column, The Secrets of the TSP Millionaires. And, you know, as we know, it's not a secret
right.
what they do. You know, they've worked for the government for a long time. During that entire time, they were putting the majority of their money into the stock funds.
Yep.
They continued to do that even when the funds were down, even when the markets were down. And they didn't, you know, worry about it. Maybe they did worry about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. But they
were
very consistent. And they were not pulling money out of the stock funds. They were not canceling their investments into the stock funds. But that can be hard to do for most people. And it's just too bad because, you know, for long-term federal employees, whether it's FERS or, you know, even with FERS, if you are just consistent and about your investments and, you know, are putting the majority of your money in the stock funds, you know, historically you would have ended up doing very, very well.
Well, when we're looking at this earlier, you know, again, you mentioned you don't let emotion get into this. You certainly don't let politics get into this. And the one common factor we find with these TSP millionaires over and over again, with the exception of those who brought it with them. You know, you had some wealthy political appointees who joined the TSP because it's such a good deal. But for those who did it the hard way by investing, they have a common trait. They invested in the C and the S funds, and they invested an average of 29 years. We need to take a break here. We'll be right back on federalnewsnetwork.com, 1500 AM. Be right back. All right, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, talking with Arthur Stein, well-known financial planner in the Washington area. And Arthur wrote the bulk of today's Federal Report column, so I can brag on it. It's one of the best. And his point is don't let emotion and certainly don't let politics get involved in your decision-making when you're investing for your future, for your long-range future. You know, your retirement could last 20 or 30 years. I just looked up a government worker who I knew slightly, and she died at 109, and she retired at the regular age. So you never know about these things. Art, how do people get in touch with you?
So my website is ArthurSteinFinancial.com. And it's so ARTHURSTEIN financial.com. And my email is art@arthursteinfinancial.com. And I'm actually doing a webinar on Saturday, I guess it's November 7th at 10 a.m. on investing in the TSP. And anybody who wants to listen to that, I mean, there's no charge. If you go to my website, the blog page, it's right now it's the blog on top.
Okay.
How to sign up for that. Of course, it's a Zoom webinar. And I think you'll find that to be very worthwhile. And you know, I do a very short poll at the end, just five questions. And one of the questions is, will you change your allocation as a result of listening to this? And quite a large percentage of people say that, you know, they will change their allocation because they, you know, learned about something about long-term investing. And, you know, I talk about the long decline in G fund returns, the effect of, you know, politics, elections on the stock market, you know, and there, that's another blog that's there too. Basically, there's no statistical evidence that would lead you to believe that elections or results are a good way to forecast returns and various other issues.
Well, that's one of the things that I, when I tout this Wilshire 6000 stock tips, it shows the face of the market at 4 p.m. that day, and it compares it to key days in the past. And every prediction about President Trump becoming President Trump was wrong, save one. All the predictions about what it would do to the market were incorrect, and people had just been consistently wrong, and it's because they let emotion get involved in it. And I know so many people, so many investment planners and whatnot say, keep emotion. You've got to keep emotion out of this thing. You don't have to be dead, but you need to keep emotion out of it because it is your worst enemy.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a way to invest. And you know, lots of people, unfortunately, let emotion dictate how they make a lot of financial decisions. I know when we do retirement plans for federal employees and retirees, and we do that a lot. You know, common question is, do I have enough money to retire now or in December or January of this year? You know, one of the things we look at is, should you purchase long-term care insurance? And basically, that's the biggest risk that people haven't taken care of in most cases. But people hate insurance companies, and they especially hate the idea of long-term care insurance, which I'm not quite sure I understand that compared to term life insurance or home and auto insurance. And I've had people say, well, you know, I don't care what the figures show. I'm not buying long-term care insurance. Just not going to do it. And that's not the way you want to plan your retirement. You want to think about, can I afford to pay for long-term care out of pocket? And especially for someone who's married, you know, then you're not only putting yourself at financial risk if you don't have long-term care insurance, but you're putting your spouse at risk too. Because one spouse could, you know, use up all the money paying for long-term care and leave a surviving, maybe perfectly healthy spouse with almost nothing. And long-term care, you know, if you want quality care, and you want quality care, it's not like, you know, you're going to stay in a cheap hotel for a couple of nights. This is like, you know, you want to be in the best nursing home, the best assisted living facility. You could be spending $150,000 a year.
Well, you know, one of my old rocking chair stories, but it's true. My aunt and my mother, her sister, they were very similar in some ways, very, like typical sisters, very different in others. And I lived with both of them at different times when I was a kid. And I noticed as an adult, when I got a car and started driving, and seatbelts became fashionable, and then they became mandatory. But they both had this habit. They'd get in the car, and I would sort of look over and go, do that, and for them to buckle. And they would put the buckle down in the thing as if they were buckling it, but they wouldn't actually buckle it. And they were like children, and they'd do this, and I would point out that they hadn't really buckled, and I'd wait for that satisfying click. And later I asked both of them different times why they did that, what they were trying to accomplish, and they both said they didn't like to think about having an accident.
Yeah.
And these are intelligent people, you know, very emotional, but very intelligent. And so when they clicked to them, that meant we could have a wreck in this thing, you know. And I think,
I think the same kind of psychology
plays out
with people who don't have a will.
Yeah.
People don't have long-term care insurance.
Yeah. Got about 2 minute final here.
I would just say, as we've said before, you just try to be consistent. With my clients, you know, we talk and spend a lot of time to decide what allocation they should have to stock funds and bond funds. And remember, in the TSP, the CS&I funds are investing in stocks and the F&G fund are investing in bonds. But try and choose an allocation that makes sense for you and then stick with it and rebalance every once in a while. Like if the market crashes, you can be selling, transferring money from the bond funds into the stock funds. And if it's 2019 and the stock market's way up and you're overinvested in stocks according to the percentages that you've chosen, then transfer money from the stock funds to the bond funds, or just don't do anything and let it go. And again, historically, you would have seen that the stock funds gradually did better than the bond funds.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Arthur Stein. One more time, how do people reach you?
www.arthursteinfinancial.com. You can sign up for a monthly newsletter and then to get invitations to my webinar. Although the webinar I'm having on November 7th, you don't have to sign up for anything.
Right.
You can just sign up.
And this is one of those, because I ask you, even if someone's not a Fed, would it be useful for them to listen just to general principles of investing?
I think that they'd be frustrated.
Really? Okay. Good to
know. If you're not a TSP participant, I would not recommend
it. Excellent. Okay. I was going to recommend it. I will not do that now. Okay. Thank you. Sorry for the technical glitches at the beginning of the show. Thank you, Eric White, for monitoring the board today. Everybody stay safe. Have a good week. We'll hope to see you back here next Wednesday at 10 a.m.
Thanks, Mike.
You've been listening to Your Turn with Mike Causey, brought to you by WEPA on Federal News Network. WEPA is the life insurance choice of over 46,000 federal workers and their families. Learn more at weepa.org.